Chapter 4 Harmony. Then Arjuna saw, in the two armies, men bound to him by the bonds of blood, fathers, grandparents, teachers, cousins, children, grandchildren, in-laws, colleagues, and other friends, all armed in war against him. With a heart torn with pain and deeply grieved, he spoke thus, O Krishna, recognizing all these men whom I must kill as my relatives, I feel my limbs paralyzed, my tongue parched on the palate, my heart trembling and my hair bristling on my head. The strength of my arm fails, my bow falls to the ground. No, Krishna, I don't want to win. So saying, in the midst of the battlefield, Arjuna let himself fall on the chariot seat, and his bow and arrows fell from his hands because his heart was filled with bitterness. And Krishna replied, At this decisive moment, O Arjuna, why do you give yourself to such discouragement, unworthy of a warrior, and which closes the heavens to you? Do not give in to weakness, which is useless. Take courage against your enemies and be what you really are. Moreover, in view of your only duty, do not hesitate, for a prince of the warrior class, nothing is superior to a just war. But if you refuse to fulfill your duty to fight in this fight, you will incur sin and will forever lose your reputation as a warrior. Fight just for the sake of fighting, without thinking of loss or gain, of joy or sadness, of victory or defeat, for by doing so, you will never sin. Bhagavad Gita. We have chosen this passage from the Bhagavad Gita to begin our reflection on the fourth ray of the spirit that must fill the fourth chamber of the third heart, absolute harmony. Perhaps the reader, after reading this quote, is asking themselves, how is it possible to speak of harmony through a struggle, a combat? The answer to these questions always surprises many people. For the absolute harmony, which must arise as a consequence of the action of the fourth ray of the spirit, can only be achieved through a very particular combat, as described in the Bhagavad Gita. For the harmony that is brought by the fourth ray has nothing to do with tranquility, or as many imagine, or even fantasize, with a perfect and imaginary peace, where we get rid of the harsh reality of life, something like the classic image of a sky with clouds, angels, and harps. Thinking of harmony always evokes these clichés with extremely unrealistic thought images, projections of an unattainable calm, and the supreme sense of peace. However, dear reader, even in the outside world, this is far from harmony. In the arid and greedy world we live in, the cost of a few moments of harmony, well-being, and tranquility for some is usually paid by many others who are called to fight the battle in our place, while we temporarily disconnect from the fight. Society is divided into castes, and even social inequality give us a very clear picture of how the basis of this harmony are illusory, unfair, and therefore unsustainable. So, in the face of all this, what is harmony in the sense of the fourth ray of the spirit? Harmony is struggle. Harmony is the product of a struggle, a very particular battle. It is the struggle of the new soul against the self and its kin, as the so beautiful allegory of the Bhagavad Gita, which we quoted at the beginning of this chapter, indicates. The key now lies in clearly understanding the different elements and characters of this inner battle. We see the figures of Krishna, of Arjuna on his chariot, and of the host of warriors, all of whom are linked to Arjuna by the bonds of blood and friendship. Krishna represents the living core of the human microcosm, the spark of the universal principle, the mobile point from which the infinite energy of the seven rays of the spirit springs, which must gradually take shape and body, transforming the entire life of the human being. Arjuna, the warrior in his chariot, represents the human consciousness, the core of the human soul, which is found in the central chamber of the etheric heart, the core of self-consciousness, which has awakened to the existence and presence of the absolute being in yourself. The human consciousness is represented by the figure of a warrior because, on the battlefield of life, he stands at the head of countless forces and has under his direct command all the human creative faculties represented by his war chariot. The figures of Krishna and Arjuna, so archetypal, emerge in their clear symbolic meaning before our inner gaze through the intuition of our soul. However, the point on which we usually still do not have such clarity of understanding is related to the hosts of warriors linked to Arjuna, who are divided into two factions, into two polarities at the same time of battle. We know that human eye consciousness is extremely complex and intricate, and that it is composed of innumerable aspects which are interconnected in a mutual correlation. In this way, the eye consciousness, or to put it directly, the human eye, is compound of true hosts of thoughts, feelings, reactions, desires, and wills. These hosts of beings, since each of these aspects is an elemental being of this nature that has its own life, are grouped by vibratory affinity and literally circulate through the respiration field, through the energy field that surrounds the human being, as if they were veritable legions crossing a battlefield from one side to the other. They represent our basic human type, made up of everything we have inherited from our parents and from all of humanity. We are therefore a synthesis of the entire evolutionary experience of life on Earth, which lives integrally in our being. We are also the product of the past lives of the microcosm, of the eternal being we inhabit in the short span of our lives. On the walls of the microcosm are engraved, as on the sarcophagi of the ancient pharaohs, all the facts of the lives of human beings who preceded us, and who also had the opportunity to live for a single time in the microcosm, in this micro-universe which we inhabit today. The sum of these experiences, engraved with fire by the intensity of each lived experience, is what we call karma, which forms, as it were, the landscape, the terrain on which the inner battle unfolds, and which also defines its dynamics. Dear reader, more important than knowing all this is what attitude we will take inwardly when we realize the constitution of our inner world. In the narrative of the Bhagavad Gita, we see how even Arjuna, the most valiant of warriors, was weakened by the need to fight his kin. In other words, the almost innate reaction of the human soul, based on what we would psychologically call an identification process, is just the opposite. The soul, the human consciousness, firmly believes that its thoughts, feelings, and reactions are one identity. It thus identifies with its thoughts, feelings, and reactions, and believes that they are its very being, that it is what it thinks, feels, and also how it reacts. So, how could we fight a battle against them? Are we not thus killing our own identity? And so, paralyzed by this process of identification, all our energy and drive to walk the spiritual path disappears. And like Arjuna, we are left prostrate before an apparent impossibility, a self-created illusion. Yes, we succumb daily, second after second, for we would rather succumb, that is, give up an inner path, than face our own creations and self-illusions of identity. Without ceasing, the sincere seekers of truth, moved by their inner yearning, are urged, impelled to go forward and to break through to the spiritual path that could transform their whole being. But how many do not succumb and in dismay, prostrate, turn their backs on this path before the terrifying illusion of confronting their own being? Many of these seekers then use the convenient but totally incorrect interpretation of what non-action is, of what a path of non-struggle is, of non-conflict, therefore of an idealized harmony. They turn their backs on the spiritual path and try to harmonize with life, nature, and their circumstances. But you will eventually discover that the search for truth is not a choice of the eye consciousness. No one chooses on a beautiful day to become deeply concerned with life and the world and thus decides to go on an inner journey that will take them out of their comfort zone, seeking to find new horizons within. Nobody chooses to become a foreigner in the world, and a stranger in the world, try as they might, will not find peace until they discover the truth in themselves. And to find out, you have to walk a path, and the path passes necessarily through the inner battle of the soul. So for years or even lifetimes, a seeker of truth can deny the path, the inner path. However, fate and karma as vectors of forces faithful to the constant, to the vibratory key of the human being, will attract them again to the circumstances that will place them in exactly the same point, right in front of the only way. When the soul consciousness of the seeker has matured sufficiently by the experiences and even by its attempts to escape the inner struggle, it will no longer wait for Krishna, the Absolute Being, to take its place in the chariot of its being and to fight the inner battle in its stead. Nor will it expect them to remove disharmony from the world and life, for it will recognize that the source of all disharmony lies within itself. And for this reason, it must be confronted and overcome to its deepest causes. When the seeker then becomes a true pupil on the inner path, then they can begin their struggle, and this struggle must resolve the apparent fundamental conflict between the sacred and the profane. The fourth ray of the spirit, the ray of harmony through conflict, is a ray with very particular characteristics. It is the ray that reaches the center of our being and which in a way must be the point of contact between the first three rays and the last three. Therefore, its task is to be the one that unites and carries out a true synthesis. But this synthesis, this union, presents a delicate balance, a balance that can only be achieved through conflict. the inner battle of the new soul against the self and its kin. Many still believe, through conditioning, culture, or even religiosity, that in their own system of life, everything that is connected to the heart and head is sacred or can manifest it, and that, on the other hand, everything that is connected to the sanctuary of life, therefore to our attitudes and reactions, is profane and should be avoided. In this sense, lofty thoughts and lofty feelings are sacred, and uncontrollable selfish reactions are clearly unholy. However, what makes an environment sacred or profane is not the external circumstances, but the condition of the soul of the person who uses such an environment. How many hovels are not true palaces? How many palaces are not but poor hovels? Think, dear reader, of the martyrs, of the ascetics, of those who isolated themselves trying to lead a holy and elevated life. Despite these genuine, sincere, and even admirable efforts, they took with them the source of everything they wanted to avoid, for they took themselves wherever they were. The same happens with us, but in our case, there is an aggravating factor, which is the fact that we not only carry the cause of our conflicts, but also that the source of our projections of high thoughts and sublime feelings is the same raw material of reactions that we reject. This is because these thoughts are just one side of the issue, an arbitrary projection of ourselves, as if we could just be light without shadows, as if the mountain of our being was formed only by the sunlit side. Thus we learn, perhaps after hard experiences and hardships, that a contemplative life whose source is found in the fight from oneself cannot take us very far from ourselves. In this way, we are approaching the true mystery of the fourth ray of the Spirit, the ray of absolute harmony, which is the mission to create synthesis, fusion, and therefore balance and harmony between what is above and what is below. This means a joint work of the three sanctuaries, a joint work of the heart, the head, and concrete life. If this does not happen, if the seeker who has become a true pupil on the path does not learn to transmute the elements of the real being, as an alchemist symbolically transmuted heavy metals into gold, their efforts will in fact be nothing but a theory. They will not cross the border of conflict. They will try, with all their understanding and the most sincere yearning of their heart, to advance and fight. But as their fight has not yet been able to transmute the reality of their sanctuary of life, they will stagnate. And as they have not won the conflict, they will project it outside of themselves. As on a seesaw, they will oscillate between the extremes of an internal conflict of consciousness and external conflict with everything and everyone. The internal conflict of consciousness is directly associated with the mechanisms of self-victimization in which we place ourselves as martyrs. And in relation to walking the spiritual path, we can nourish useless feelings of guilt, but at the same time, they comfort us. Deluded, we would come to the erroneous conclusion that walking this path is almost impossible, and that we suffer when walking it. Wouldn't this be a sign that we are on the right path and that our efforts are worth it? The external conflict in relation to the attempt to tread the spiritual path was always manifested in the antagonism between the individual and the institutions, which were always just a visible image of a manifestation of the universal teaching. The true spiritual school is always one and unique. It is the direct manifestation of the universal teaching. However, in the world in which we find ourselves, it always needs an institution, an organized group, which can serve as a means of contact. And how many were those who, frustrated by the futility of their efforts, instead of really attacking themselves, turned all their fury against the visible aspect of the universal teaching that came to them, attacking what their hands could grasp and what their words could reach. People. And what would be the cause of these efforts ending up this way? Weren't they seekers willing to fight against themselves? Were they not willing to confront their relatives, the ghosts that cover their real inner being like veils, and to remove them, then being able to unite themselves perfectly with it through the transmutation of their consciousness and their life? Yes, unlike the one who refused combat, who tried to simulate harmony or even extinguish the flame of the search to conform with themselves and with the fragmented external reality, these seekers sought the conflict of the soul with the unconscious forces of their inner world. However, they forgot something fundamental. They tried to conquer the self themselves. They, like Arjuna, even though they were valiant warriors, tried to fight the millions of other warriors who surrounded them without the Absolute Being, without Krishna being in their chariot. They sought to fight based on their understanding, on the good intentions, on the strength of dogmas and institutions. However, they lacked the essentials. They lacked the beginning, the connection with the Absolute Being. They lacked the connection with the seven rays of the Spirit, which should have already taken up residence in them. Symbolically, they lacked the presence of Krishna in their chariot. For this reason, the spiritual schools of all times have always pointed out that the seeker who has become a pupil on the path can never do without this help. In the beginning, this help comes to this pupil through the sum of all that has already been transmuted by those who have accomplished and who, to a certain extent, have won the battle of the soul against the I-being of selfishness in themselves. These efforts form, as it were, a field of lines of force which can become active when we truly connect with them. As the soul continues its struggle, supported by this impersonal but omnipresent power, Krishna manifests himself in this war chariot, that is, the Absolute Being gradually takes shape in the being of the pupil through the seven rays of the Spirit. It is never about the influence of a disembodied being, a would-be light being, or even a master or a guru, as that would just be another stumbling block on the way of the One Truth. The One Truth knows no other master than the Absolute Being, the One, which is already in the very seeker who has become a pupil on the path. Based on this power, the pupil will be able to fight and win the battle of the soul against egocentrism and its consequent state of consciousness and life. That pupil will become a strong one. In them will also speak the faculty of the fourth ray, the harmony that emerged through the gradual victory of the soul's combat. For, as we have been told so many times by the universal teaching. Those who conquer themselves are stronger than those who conquer a city. To end this chapter, we would like to quote a few words that Zwier Willem Lene, one of the founders of the spiritual school, wrote to his brother, Jan van Reichenborg, and that applied to pupils of the school faced with the reality of their inner battle. We hope that they can also give encouragement and courage to all those who seek, with all their being, the realization of the only way. Seek in your heart the source of your sufferings and close this source every minute of the day. Don't do or say something without thinking so as not to create reasons for a new sadness. Realize that the strongest is always the one who conquers himself. If pain takes hold of you, regain your calm, and don't run away from yourself through numbness or lies, but look at everything in the light of its multiple relationships. Understand that this process is like a purifying fire that burns and cleanses wounds. You must carry out this purification fervently, for you cannot become a signpost unless you have given birth to a new phoenix. Do not look to the past nor wait for the future to manifest, because eternity vibrates in every second. Refuse isolation, for your place of work is the world and humanity, and the souls of those who isolate themselves become sterile and vain. You are required to be a model and to do the works and not just pretend to do so. You must not speak about dead text, but only about the truth according to your own experience. Don't talk about what you have learned until it has become your possession. Otherwise, you will be like parrots imitating words you don't understand. Think about what you were given at birth. Your own unique personality. It has a purpose. It is the vehicle with which you must express yourself. It shows what you must conquer and control. Stay close to it and don't let go of the bridles for even a second, lest the horse, freed from its master, runs away. Don't give up in a battle, no matter how tiring the fight. Always start again without rest, so that you can find the light. Don't keep anything for yourself. Offer an opinion to others if they ask for it, and don't make the whole world a misery out of your own personal misery. If any aspect of sin is difficult to deal with, withdraw your attention from it, and you will see that the weeds will die for lack of food. If you find yourself beginning to reap the rewards of your new inner battle, don't stand still. Look around you and offer them to those who are hungry and thirsty for your fruits, because every fruit that was gained and offered after a hard struggle multiplies many times and will be offered back to you in abundance in many different forms. Don't worry about the outcome of an inner battle, because you will surely win it if you are in his light and if you can forget about yourself. Even if you fall 1,000 times and you lack energy, your wounds will heal and you will rise again with a new strength. Think, brother, that love, fully realized, is the most powerful weapon in the world. So don't just sit on the side of the road. Don't be discouraged. And don't lose heart. Learn, brother, that you must be overcome and conquered completely before you can be free. This is a fight that you must fight and win daily. Our path must be a light and a blessing to all the world.